It is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, your destination for all things gardening, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, 850 videos, and a whole lot more for free. We thank you for listening. If you're tuning in for the very first time, we hope you're enjoying the program. You can also catch podcast replays on the website underneath the radio tab.
Master Gardeners. We have Mike Novak. He spent the past 20 years talking about gardening, the environment, and green living on Chicago radio. He's also an author and columnist. Mike is an all-around advocate for gardening and being green. His radio show airs every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. and Sunday 9 to 11 a.m. on WCGO 1590 and can be heard live at MikeNovak.net, and that's N-O-W-A-K.net, and through the Simple Radio and TuneIn apps.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show, Mike Novak.
I can't possibly live up to the hype, so... Maybe I should just hang up and you guys...
Well, you have a good day then. Well, we appreciate you taking time. I know you got the show coming up in Chicago at the top of the hour. We thank you for taking time and spending a few minutes with us and our listeners.
Are you kidding me? I love you guys. You guys are the best. And I'm so happy for you now that you've got your live radio show in Wisconsin. That is just... awesome.
One of our friends said it's real radio.
It is. It's real radio. Well, you know, if you're like me, and I know you guys have done kind of the same thing where you podcast off of your dining room table, and it's out there. And the great thing about the internet is that anybody can do it, but there's something about AM radio that is just really cool, and doing it live. And one of the things that I find is... there's an energy that when you do it live that you just can't replace. You can't, there's nothing like it when you're doing a podcast. So I love that energy and I love the people listening live, and I hope that all the folks who are listening right now, they continue to listen and support you and tell their friends and tell their enemies that they need to listen to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. And, you know, and being a radio guy myself, when I was on hold, waiting for you guys, I'm listening to your commercials, and I'm going, oh, commercials, ooh, you know? So good for your sponsors, too, for supporting you. I really applaud them.
Well, you were a big help in that. You didn't get the sponsors for us, but we had several teleconferences with you, and you kind of gave us the secrets of radio and told us what we were doing wrong and what we needed to change, and you really helped us. Open our eyes to things that we never knew about that really made this show what it is today and make it possible that we're here every Saturday morning.
Well, if I know so much, how come I ain't rich?
Some of the wealthiest people are the ones with the least amount of money, Mike.
Oh, can I write that down?
Yeah, that's yours. You can use that.
Okay, great. I'm going to use it on the show today since I am on the air at 10, yeah. Which means that we probably should get to business here, shouldn't we?
Yeah, well, Mike, you're a backyard. You have a background in theater, and you know how to present the information. But how did you get into gardening and green living radio talk and all of that?
You know, it was kind of... in evolution, I've worked in radio my whole life, but it certainly wasn't about horticulture or agriculture. But about 30 years ago, close to 30 years ago, not quite yet, I got a vacation home in the Pacific Northwest with my partner Kathleen. And we loved it there because it was in the rainforest and... you know, temperate, it's a temperate rainforest. There's like four of them in the whole world. And one of them, of course, is along the coast there, stretches basically from the middle of Oregon all the way up to Alaska. And so there's 300 foot tall trees and ferns and lichen and moss, and it rarely gets above 80 and rarely gets below 30. And so it's a green paradise. And after a few years there, I realized I know more about the Pacific Northwest plants than I do about the ones in Chicago where my real home is. And I said, that's crazy. And so I took a Master Gardener course because I wanted to learn more about what was going on. And I also wanted to grow things in my yard. And I had lived in apartments for, I'm in Chicago and had lived in apartments for a long time. And then we bought a house and we were able to start gardening. But even before that, one of the apartments we lived in had a backyard and nobody was paying attention to it. And we said to the landlord, hey, can we garden here? And they said, knock yourselves out. So we kind of took it over And it's where I started to learn. And it was one of those weird little spaces, and tiny, tiny little, there was a three flat, and it got direct sun about 4 days a year. That was about it. And so I was growing things. I learned so much about shade plants in that time. It was kind of a miracle that I could grow anything at all, but it's amazing how plants adapt and what you can grow if you just have a little plot of land.
Fantastic. Now, you live in an old house now, over 100 years old, that has lead paint that has been found in your soil. How do you garden with having the lead affect your plants, and how can other people deal with the same problem?
Yeah, it's an issue, and what you got to know, first of all, is if you live in an old home, there's probably lead paint. You know, up until the 70s, we were using lead-based paints. What happens, lead will flake off. The lead paint will flake off the house, and it'll go into the soil. And lead does not move readily in the soil. You can cap it, which is great, and then put compost and stuff over it, and it's not going to come up through the soil. Once it's there, it's there. But if you do have it in your soil, you got to be a little bit careful about growing things. However, over the years, since I did this lead test, and I want to say it was a dozen years ago, and the results, I took it to two different labs, which is, I think, always interesting too, because you go to a doctor, and your doctor tells you you've got a problem. What do you want? You want a second opinion. So I did the same thing with the lead test. I got this one, and it said, wow, the lead is really through the roof here. And then I went to another lab, and it wasn't as high, but the ratios were exactly the same. So it told me, okay, I'm onto something here. I can tell which part of my yard has high lead content. What the exact number is, well, it kind of depends on how aggressive the lead test is that you're doing, and that gets into the science of it, and not, the average gardener is not going to understand all the science of it. It's just good to know that if you got lead in your soil, there are various ways to deal with it. One, as I said before, is you cap it. You put a layer of clay, or you put a fabric barrier over it, and then you put your compost on top of that in your soil, and you should be okay. And that's why people have raised beds a lot of times. That's to deal with the lead problem. What I discovered that's even more important is the bioavailability of lead in plants. And I don't know if you guys have talked about this on your show at all, but that's kind of a new science. We don't really know how well plants take up lead. We do know that fruiting bodies tend not to store lead. So if you're growing tomatoes in your soil, the tomato itself will not have lead in it. The fruiting, or a raspberry or a strawberry, they tend not to have the fruiting. The fruiting bodies tend not to accumulate lead. However, you're growing carrots or beets, you have to be very conscious of it. And the point is, don't eat. This sounds simple. Don't eat the soil. All right. Well, how do you not eat the soil? Well, you clean off your beets. You clean off your carrots. Make sure you remove all of the soil if you think you have an issue at all. Lettuces and spinaches, they're close to the ground. And, of course, as you know, when you harvest, you can get soil in there. You wash it within an inch of its life if you think you've got lead in your soil, and you're probably going to be fine. So over the years, what I've discovered is it's really not about what the plant's taking up so much as it is keeping the produce clean when you eat it, and make sure that you wash it well.
And for our listeners who may think they have lead in their soil, there's no, hey, I'm looking at the soil, I know it, there's lead because of telltale signs. You have to get a soil test. There's no visual signs that tells you, oh, that soil has lead, correct?
That's right. Yeah, you have to get a test. And that's why I was actually writing a story for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine when I did this. And so I said, okay, let's look at my backyard. And I was a little bit surprised. I shouldn't have been surprised because, as you said, my house is like 125 years old, so I knew that there had been lead paint slapped on it many, many times. And, of course, right by the house was where most of the lead was, because that's where most of the paint chips had fallen off. But it can also happen along parkways because of the lead we used to have in gasoline. If you're a house, people say, well, I'm in the country. I don't have that issue. But you might have other issues. There might have been an orchard there, and some toxic elements were used
in farms and orchards in the past. You should probably get a soil test and see what you, you know, there's lead and there's, what's the other one I'm thinking of?
Arsenic?
Arsenic, yes. Arsenic can be a problem, too. Thank you for unblocking my brain there. yeah, you need to actually do a soil test for that. It's a little bit over $100 or something like that, which sounds a little bit expensive for some people, but if you think you have it, it's well worth the cost.
Well, for a few minutes we have left, Mike, you are an author. You wrote a book called Attack of the Killer Asparagus. What's the book about and where can people find it?
Well, as you mentioned, I do a column. I write for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, and now I'm in my 14th year of writing a column. And anybody who's ever read my column knows that it's, as I say, I make stuff up and they pay me for it. And it's about gardening, but it's like the dystopian side of gardening. The people and plants and critters in my world are a little bit off-center. I try to add a little humor to things. And after I've been doing this for 10 or 11 years, actually about a dozen years, I decided, you know, let's put some of these in a book. And so I put the best of like the first 6 years in the book Attack of the Killer Asparagus, which you can get at aroundtheblockpress.com, aroundtheblockpress.com. Or you can go to MikeNovak.net and take a look. I think I've got it there. Boy, now you're going to make me hang up and go on my own website and see if I've got the info on the book. I think I got it there. It's been out for a couple of years, but some people think it's funny. I think it's the best bathroom book ever written because you read a column and then, you know, you can leave it and come back the next time you're in there. So a lot of people like it, and I appreciate that.
Well, Mike, we greatly appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your very hectic morning before you get on the radio in Chicago and join Holly and myself and our listeners to share a little bit of your garden knowledge with all of us.
Thank you, Mike.
I got to ask you a real quick question. Yeah. What do you tell people about tomatoes right now? It's pretty nasty weather, isn't it?
Well, we just did a segment before you came on about four tips on how to plant them correctly to get the best harvest, but we're going to hold off and we're not going to plant ours. We've got them hardened off. We may put some in the ground tomorrow, but the majority is going to wait until next weekend.
Good for you. Yeah, I always tell folks in Chicago, June 1st. Don't even bother until June 1st. And this has been the year that proves that rule because it's been so crazy, the weather.
Yeah, we may get snow in July. We just don't know.